is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody is doing well on another nice spring day. Temperatures back around 80 degrees today, and still not, you know, not bad humidity since we're at this time of year. So hope everybody's doing well. It is the Wednesday edition of the Drive with Bill, Dan at the controls, and Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us here in the studio. JC, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Didn't get any rain where I was last night.
Didn't get any rain at my house either.
But I got back in into town last night, and it was wet. So there was some pollen knocked and washed away some places. So that was nice.
Yeah, we headed out to Opelika yesterday evening, and it rained out there. Is where we saw.
I had some in my house and on the other side of Auburn too, on Richland Road area.
And there was some midweek baseball that was disrupted around the country. You know, for rain, there were some games that were postponed or delayed.
Pretty scary weather around. I mean, there was a lot of lightning last night. You could see the lightning, but we didn't get really any of the bad weather here. But weather didn't disrupt the game, Jason, last night. But Auburn, another game where they just the bats. You thought maybe, you know, and I was listening to you guys, and you're thinking there in the. Was it just the second or the third? Second, wasn't it?
Scored three in the second.
In the second inning. I mean, when you get Bub hits the oppo and you get the two-run double from
Bristol, yep.
I mean, you're thinking okay, the bats are coming alive. Auburn didn't have another hit.
Nothing after that. And had the bases loaded in the third inning.
That was really big. After Tech had scored six, you had a chance just with a base hit. To make it a one-run game.
Yeah, it felt like there were two.
And that was with one out, wasn't
it? It felt like there were two moments in the game. I thought the walk by Chatterton with one out in the second inning, it really changed everything because once he got into the stretch, he just wasn't comfortable. And then they started hammering it.
They can do that.
And that's it. Yes. Playing that team in that park. And he knew, especially on this night, because, listen, neither team, they left to go to California today. Neither team was going to go very deep in pitching staffs.
No, I mean, they started a kid with a 70 ERA.
Yeah, and they threw eight different guys. So it was basically a bullpen night for them, for their relievers. They threw some guys that can pitch. But
does Tech have a cross-country ACC trip?
Yeah, they go to Cal this weekend, I think.
That's
tough. And play Thursday.
Play Thursday, because of Easter. But, this team is scuffling right now. They're not the only one, but that's the one that we're most familiar with. And so you pay attention to more to Auburn, but – you look at it, and quite honestly, outside of two weekends, they haven't really swung the bat well all year.
No, you're right.
So it's not like they've gone into a funk. They were winning games. You're just playing better teams now.
I have said all year long, you know, I think these guys can hit.
Yeah,
I mean,
correct.
I just feel like they can, but we've been waiting for them to break out. But instead of that, they've sort of, you know,
well, like gone, I said, you're facing better pitching.
It's gotten worse because, I mean, when Auburn swept Missouri, they really only hit the ball in one game.
In one inning.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
In one inning.
That's right.
One
it was
game.
A seven-run inning, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you scored a bunch of runs, a pretty good bit of runs when you were in Arlington against good teams, Kansas State, Florida State, Louisville. And then Nebraska is a pretty good team as well, and you hammered the ball all weekend against that team. And outside of that, you played pretty good against South Alabama, had a good night against Georgia Tech the first time you played them. But they just haven't been able to get it going. And listen, you know, like, there's a lot of pressure on Chris Rembert and Chase Fralick and Eric Guevara right now because, look, Bub's not swinging it very well. You really haven't gotten anything from Lucas Steele and Todd Clay and, you know, some of those guys you thought were going to be those guys. Bristol Carter's been playing well, but the McCrane brothers cooled off. And so, There's a lot of pressure.
And, Bristol's SEC average isn't all that great either.
No, he's hitting one. He's hitting a buck 30.
They don't have a regular right now, an everyday starter hitting over 250 in SEC.
No, Lucas is the only guy with over 15 at bats. Yeah. I mean, and he's got 18. Yeah. And he's the only one hitting over 250.
Chase is hitting 250 right in conference.
I think a couple guys right at 250. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a team.
So you got three home runs in nine games, and so here's the positive. The positive is you're exactly where you were last year. Over 4-5 last year. And it can happen. You can play worse. I'll be shocked if they do. But listen, especially the last couple of days.
It's been sloppy.
Yeah. Here's something interesting. So after we got done today, I went out to practice, and I get my walking in and do some stuff, and talked to Kay Ballou, and he said, "That was crazy." And I was like, "What?" And he said, "I didn't have a monitor. We did not have a monitor in the radio booth last night." He said, "Yeah, the ground balls," he said, "they were moving a foot side to side. Like, because of the way the grass was cut, because of the grain in the outfield."
Oh, okay.
And so he said, "Look," he said, "have you seen Bub's video?" And I didn't see it, but somebody else said they saw it. Said Bub goes down to catch the ball, and the ball jumps sideways like 10 inches. And like, he completely misses it by almost a foot of his glove. And then Kane went down on a knee on a ball in right field and still misplayed it. Yeah. That's how much it moved. And so they're like, listen, it was just moving all over the place on them.
Has outfield defense been a problem?
Not really.
One of the issues this year? I mean, it feels
No.
What you don't want is to spring new leaks.
Yeah,
right?
That's it. Like, I think, you know, probably a little bit of concentration when those things happen. But look, they were saying, look, those balls were moving around a little bit. But – you know, it did, and Butch was right last night. I felt it too. It felt like for the first time, you're like, well, it was a woe is me. Man, here we go again. This thing's not going our way. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see
it. It's hard not to get into that.
It's going to happen sometimes where you go like, man, what are we supposed to do? Like Eric Guevara hit the ball. I mean, he had it two balls over 100 miles an hour last night. They both got caught on the infield. And so you start going, man, what's it going to take? What are we doing? Well, you just have to keep going to work. And so, listen, they were out there today. We got done at probably 1 o'clock. I walked and went upstairs to work, and Gabe Gross had four or five guys, and they were early hitting, doing some stuff. And so baseball is a sport like most other sports. The same thing with a shooter. It's very similar to me to a guy shooting the basketball. When you start to see the basketball go in, then all of a sudden it changes everything about you. The same thing. You start to see a couple of balls fall, and it changes everything about you swinging. They just got to find that. And there's nothing to do until it happens except to work.
Is there anyone you get the sense – because, I mean, obviously what they'd like is for the players currently in the lineup to sort of figure things out. Is there anyone you get the sense is on a particularly short leash or anyone who could be not in the lineup that could break their way in as they look for answers here?
I think Logan Gregorio is probably the first guy now. I think that's a guy that we'll see, especially against right-handers, see Gregorio get more swings here and you know, kind of put him in that lineup. I think that's a guy that you'll start to see. You know, other than that, I mean, I talked to them before the game last night, and they're like, listen, for this team to get where we need to get to, Bub Terrell and Kay Ballou are going to have to hit the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I asked Butch today, sort of just jokingly. It's like, is it to the point where, you know, you just put all the names in a hat and draw them out? And he said, look, he knows the guys that they need to have performing well. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like he's ready to make any drastic lineup changes. And Jason's right. Maybe a change, but the guys that need to come through, they want to keep putting them out there and try to get them out of this funk that they've been in.
I think that's right. I think you're just going, hey, look, you've earned it. We've seen you do it before. Go do it again. And you don't have to worry about if you don't hit it one day not being in the lineup the next day.
I was just thinking, and I was going to add to it, but I didn't when I was when we were over there. Just something, maybe something to just sort of lighten things up a little bit, because that what you worry about is, you know, they're pressing, they're trying so hard, they're about to, you know, squeeze the bat handle in half. If you do something like that, like who knows who's batting in what position in the lineup, sometimes it's more like, oh, fun, we're just going out and hitting the ball around, because I, you know, that's what That's what you'd love to do, just to have them have fun. And if something happens, then, hey, I mean, it can turn around quickly.
Yeah, and I think you look, and I like Chase Frelick early. He's a guy that gets good swings. He approaches pitches. And Chris Rembert is a great baseball player, but he is pressing right now.
Yeah, the stat you had today, while we were over there,
he had four outs on five pitches last night. And, you know, people have – and we had this kind of discussion on one of my stories over the weekend. People were talking about, well, we watch too many pitches.
I've heard that criticism very recently.
Well, not when you're making four outs on five pitches.
Yeah, I mean, like your best hitter's not doing that. And so –
And I've always, especially in the last like 20, 25 years of baseball, maybe there have been college baseball players who are the exception to this, but I've always thought that taking pitches has been a trademark of the best hitters.
I agree.
Like guys who take pitches and guys who wait for their pitch, that's been something like the guys you would describe over the last 25 years in the pros.
Oh, and,
who do
and,
that
and all
are,
baseball. Absolutely. Absolutely. With the only caveat there is if you know that a pitcher is just dependent and he always throws that first pitch for a strike,
and
then you may want to jump on him. But yes.
You know, to me, it's situational.
Yes.
Not necessarily hitter, but situational. If he's struggling and he's been kind of all over the place a little bit, and you know, like, this guy's going to throw me a first pitch fastball, I'm okay with that at times. Situationally is where it's at. I mean, there was a situation last weekend where you had a couple of guys that got hit by pitches, and you got a guy that's struggling. You're struggling to score runs, and you swing at the first pitch.
Swing at the first pitch. That's one that just drives you crazy.
And so you look, and so there's opportunities, I think. But, yeah, every hitter's different. But I do agree. I think strike zone awareness is the ultimate key. If you can swing at the first pitch, that's fine. But make sure it's a strike and it's the pitch you want. Because there's a lot of guys that hit better that hit really well with two strikes. You don't hit better with two strikes. But I tried to explain to somebody. They said, the best pitch you're going to get is 0-0. And I said, no, it's not. The best pitch you're going to get is 1-0 or 2-0. You know, like the highest batting average. The highest batting average is on 1-0 and 2-0. It's not on 0-0. So don't swing at bad pitches. But
yeah, 0-0 isn't the ultimate hitter's count.
No, I mean, 1-0 and 2-0 is.
Yeah,
yes. But I think you look at this team, and I think confidence, start to get it going a little bit, I think is a big deal. Listen, you're facing an Arkansas team that's in the same boat. You're not used to saying that, but Arkansas has lost 4 in a row and 5 out of 6, but it's completely opposite for them. They've scored runs, but they've given up a ton. I looked, and I think in their last four games they've given up 31 runs in four games. So
wow.
They give them a bunch of runs. And so you start to look at them going, okay, it's an opposite thing.
Yeah, it's strength versus strength and weakness versus weakness. Yeah.
That's it. So, but you're at home and you got a home stand. I think you got 8 straight at home. And then Auburn only has 6 home games the rest of the year. I think it's seven home games the rest of the year. So you have this home stand and then it's on the backside of it. So, but yeah, the good thing is that, there's no need to push a panic button. You still got 7 SEC weekends remaining, and you got a chance to get right back in the thick of things with a good weekend here against Arkansas.
All right, we're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive. Jason Caldwell in along with Bill and Dan. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. Jason's here in hour number one. Is Adam still planning on coming by? I didn't say anything to him today when I saw him.
I haven't heard anything from Adam, so I'm assuming, yeah.
I expect him to be here. We're going to have another special guest joining us at 5:30. Gene Chizik's going to give us a call.
Oh, wow!
At 5:30. He's got a speaking engagement coming up. We'll talk some other things with him as well. So,
not every day you get to talk to coach who won a national championship in football.
So we'll talk to him.
How about this? Undisputed national championship
you're absolutely right.
In football, too.
All right, so we've got a fun show for you here. Love for you to join in on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Looking for a home service?
211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. A fun time of year. Jason getting an opportunity, doing a lot of baseball, doing a great job, as a matter of fact, on color with baseball. But, I mean, we've got basketball tomorrow night.
We got a busy night tomorrow night.
Tomorrow is extremely busy.
Yes, it's 6 o'clock baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Right behind us at 7 o'clock will be a football scrimmage in Jordan-Hare Stadium, which will be closed to the media, and then 8:30 basketball game. So all that happening at the same time tomorrow night.
Maybe there'll be some leaks from the scrimmage behind us while we're at baseball.
There'll be a few people there, I'm sure.
Somebody, who was it that asked me? It was the Sandersons asked me this morning. I do a little thing every Wednesday with Wimp and Barry Sanderson in Tuscaloosa, and they were like, "So is the scrimmage open?" I said, "Are you serious? When was the last time you've heard of a scrimmage being open?"
I'm trying to remember.
Sandersons.
I'm trying to remember the last time
a scrimmage was open. Was it Tubbs?
Was it before the end of Tuberville?
No, not right at the end.
I'm thinking once Nick Saban got hired,
everything
would have been before 2008.
I was thinking it's maybe
6 or 7.
You have the Saban hire, and
so
you
it's
have
been
the,
20 years.
And
social media.
You know what I always point to as something that seemed to change the tenure a little bit as far as access was the Daron Fur incident and the way it was circulated afterward maybe made folks rethink. And I have no idea, like, if anyone officially, you know, made that call. But Jason, you remember. Like the
Zach Ethridge.
And that's right around 06, 07, too.
Like yeah.
That's in the same ballpark.
It was the onset of social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so news was able to get out quicker.
There was
all those
news
things.
That was out, like, before scrimmages were over, there was when people were being able to find out some of the
and
things.
You know
that's
what?
When coaches went, ah,
hey, and even,
don't think
even
so.
When
so
they're closed, news gets out.
Oh, you're right.
If social media had been around back when Lee Zimba was putting his teammates through tables at practice, then I maybe they'd rethink. But no, it's it sounds like there's going to be, well, there's a scrimmage tomorrow night.
Yes.
You know, there's still. I'm still really interested in. I mean, there are positions where it seems pretty clear who the starter is going to be. There are a couple of them.
I know one.
I know two.
And it's two guys right
on offense.
Yeah, the one snapping to the other one.
That's right. Sure. The guys that are right there next to
each other. Yeah, Cole Best and Byron Brown.
And mm-hmm. and it does feel like some of the South Florida receivers maybe are the first ones up.
I would think those guys would be there. But
if Chaz Nimrod isn't a starter, I will.
Yeah.
Be
so the list is growing a little bit.
But you look and go, look, there's just, and I like it. It's a lot of competition.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what players have to say. I liked what former players had to say when I talked to a bunch of them on Saturday. There were more than 200 of them. Again, we don't know what this is going to look like when it happens, but I do think that people that know football and have, you know, the sweat and the blood and all the things that go along with it, establishing at Auburn for many years past, believe that this looks like it's supposed to look. That's a good start for me.
Right.
And so, you know, I've enjoyed getting to, you know, and like I said, I got to know a lot of these guys through the transfer portal recruiting day that they had, because it's basically just a day. You get to meet them a little bit. But you look at some of these guys, and now that they've been around for a couple of months, and I mentioned it yesterday, we saw, you know, Derek Plaz walking by the Miami O-line transfer, and he's just a mountain of a human being.
He's a guy, I don't think a lot of people had him penciled in as a possible starter. I think people were looking, you know, maybe Cale Ellis, looking at some of the other guys, maybe Jack Lehrer, who's been working. He also has been working at guard. As a matter of fact, he's working there with Derek.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I mean, yes, he has really, I think, caught the eye of the coaches. You can see he's out there. He's working with the first group. That doesn't mean he's a starter.
Yeah.
But he's obviously having a good spring.
Yeah, it feels like there's probably
He looks like an SEC starting guard, a mountain
right there. I mean, like he's a big guy. But yeah, you look at you know, some of the other guys. I love Ty Buster last year. He reminds me of, you know, Auburn's played Kendall Simmons at offensive tackle, and they played guys like that. But his arms are so long that he's 6'3". but probably realistically he's more like a 6'5", 6'6" guy. Because here in the end, it's not height that matters. It is length to be able to block guys. Mm-hmm. That is the difference, and he has that length to be able to do those things.
And even the last couple of years, like I know the offensive line hasn't necessarily been a strength for Auburn, but I also like I don't know if Auburn lacked offensive linemen who looked the part, right? Like under
no.
Freeze, like I thought
no,
they
no
you know, they'd
no
a good
absolutely
job.
Not.
Like to me, like it all keeps coming back to Byron Brown, right? Because if you have figured out the quarterback situation, like we've seen quarterbacks show up and elevate.
Yeah, I think
average
it's, and
team.
System.
Yeah, I mean
system.
And system. But even Gene Chizik, you know, oversaw a team that got drastically different when the right quarterback arrived.
But they were pretty good under Chris Todd, though.
You're right. The jump from 8 to 9
because of the system
is a significant
they
one.
They had a plan on offense. And yeah, I think, and you look at, and you plug Nick Marshall in there when Gus Malzahn comes back, and you go, okay, system, all the things that matter. I thought 2017 with Chip Lindsey kind of twisting it a little bit towards Jarrett Sidham worked really well.
Those are also quarterbacks in the case of Cam and Stidham, and I guess to an extent Bo Nix. It's like those are the last couple of guys to come to Auburn and take over as the starter. With momentum, having just played well in their last stop, right? I mean, you think about, like, I mean, the last couple of years, like, Jackson was coming off a rough year at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Peyton was coming off of a rough season at Michigan State.
Correct.
When he got to Auburn, or coming off a rough season at Auburn.
Well, I mean, like,
when he went to year two.
But yeah, like, really, but the other guys, none of them had done it at this level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, they were successful, but they hadn't been successful here.
Stidham had played well in a couple of games, right,
yeah.
At Baylor, but not.
Yeah, you know, Cam
not
was junior college, Bo was high school. But you look at what Byron is, and the interesting thing about him is you see, and of course, a lot of it made of throwing motion. But I'll show you this: when he releases the ball, where he releases the ball is right where it's supposed to be. Like it didn't get there the right way.
Yeah,
like when
it comes up,
but he throws it up there, mm-hmm. And I don't care. I don't
and
care what it looks
it's
like.
It's a missile. Coming
That's the
out
thing.
Of
I don't
it.
Care
some
what it looks
those,
like.
Some of those downfield throws that we got to see him throw
yeah,
yesterday.
Like I said, I don't care what it looks like because he's probably 235 pounds, can really run, really athletic.
I heard a Dak Prescott comparison recently.
Yeah,
as far as physically.
I think size wise, yeah. I think it's very similar. Can he do some of the same things? And I said, like when they signed him. I loved it, but the more I watched Tristan Tia, I think that guy's had his chance to be really special. And
you love an ex-baseball player at quarterback too.
Well,
right?
I just like the ease at which he throws the football. It is effortless to watch him throw a football,
and it gets there.
Yeah, no, he has arm talent, and he's athletic, and he can go. And so, but yeah, fun to watch them. And again, the receivers, you mentioned some of those guys, but. Jeremiah Cover and Singleton. Nimrod's not small. That's the thing about him is he's a guy that can really run, but he is not a small guy. He's not a guy you go, oh, this guy's fast. That must mean he's 5'9", 165 pounds. That's not Chaz Nimrod. I mean, he's got some size to him, and so I think it's going to be a physical group. And the tight ends, Jonathan Echols, has probably been one of the biggest surprises
Man.
To me so far.
I mean, watching, and 19 looks great too. Johnson looks like he's ready to go.
He was the guy I thought was going to be the guy. I watched Jake Johnson since he was in high school, and then obviously, you know, so early at Texas A&M, he had a couple of catches against Auburn in games.
And he was a big factor in that. Win.
And so I think you've seen those guys, but
Echols looks
Echols,
like
to me
the tools
has been maybe there. Outside of I don't know. I'm trying to think. He's probably the guy that I went. Okay, I don't know what to expect from him. Who's probably surprised me the most out of this entire
of the whole team?
Jonathan Echols, just physically looking at him, because I saw him when he came in. He'd had a shoulder surgery. And I went, well, I don't know if he's going to be big enough. And then you see him on the field, and you look, well, he has gotten bigger and stronger, and there's still more to come for him, I think, when you start to look at his potential and the things he can do. But really athletic in what he does. And so the tight end,
like, you know
tight
what?
End group's an interesting group.
I would say, I mean, it moves like a receiver.
Yeah, too, I mean, 6'6", 235.
6'6", 235, yeah. I mean.
And gives you that feel of the – hybrid, but a lot of hybrids are 6'3", 215. This is a 6'6", 235-pound guy.
Tell you what, while we're talking targets for Byram, I keep thinking there's going to be a role for Bryce Kane in this offense,
too. They like Bryce.
Yeah,
his speed. I mean, it's and I said
I think Tia threw a pass. It was either Tia or the other backup quarterback who was throwing to different quarterbacks, and they were doing that same drill that we were watching.
Yeah.
And there was one coming off the hand, and it's like, oh, that's going to be – like that. The receiver doesn't have a chance.
Yeah.
At that pass, and it's like, oh no, it's Bryce Kane, so he's gonna chase it down and get under it in time, he's exciting. Like I think that's a guy that I want to I hope gets the opportunity out there this fall, because it seems like he's ready for action.
He and he's changed his He may, I don't know, he may still weigh about the same, but he's not built the way he was when he got here.
That's the thing. You know, we talking about, guys, and, Parker Pritchett, look at him, and I talked to his mom and dad coming in the other day, and I said, he weighs like 315 now. And I was like, yeah, but he looks completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looks like a different person who still weighs the same. And that's what you want. That's what you want to see when you see guys go, man, he looks a lot different. I was trying to, there was somebody else to me that jumped out when I saw him the other day, and I said, man, he looks a lot different, but I know he weighs the same. I can't remember who it was. I tell you, somebody who looks really good, because I just did him in a photo gallery, is the DB that transferred from Notre Dame who was playing wide receiver.
Scrap.
Yeah. He is a physical-looking guy at a corner. Mm-hmm. Gavin Jenkins is long. Again, a lot of positivity, and that's what you should have right now.
Yeah, it's spring. Hopefully,
Somebody asked me, like, what position are you worried about? I said, none of them. I'm not worried about a single position on April 1st. Not one.
And that's not an April Fool's Day.
I'll tell you what, when I'm asked about, like, potential weaknesses or places where I'm – concern's not the word. Places where I am curious to see how it goes. I want to see where the pass rush comes from on this team and how effective – it is. I mean, there were questions. I mean, last year's pass rush was up and down, and you had Keldrick Falk and Keyron Crawford, who were both going to be drafted. And I think some folks are astonished at how early some of these projections have Keldrick Falk going. You know, top 10, top 12 pick potentially in the draft later this month. But it's so to replace those guys, like as promising as some of the internal options are, I've always liked Jarrett Smith. I know you have too.
Oh yeah, I think he's a freak. You don't have that guy. He's that guy now. Whether it turns into that on the field, we'll see. But he has freak qualities when you look at him.
Unteachables.
Yes,
he's got unteachables.
Correct. Yeah, it's kind of going back to the old school. They're like, man, what are they doing this? And like everybody always tell me, like, oh, what's the strength? The strength and conditioning staff's not doing this or that. And I said, listen.
There's only so much you can do.
My old one is like, listen, you can train, and I could have trained my entire life to block Reggie White, and I'm going to do it. I don't care. You could have done it every day of my life. I could have practiced to block him, and I couldn't have done it.
Who was it yesterday? Was it Ty? Who was it? Who was it that said, and then I said something to you. One of the players came up and said, no, it was Eric Winters. Eric Winters said something about, somebody was talking about mental and physical, and he went, well, he goes, It's much more mental than it is physical. And I said to either Jason or Brian, I said, man, if that's the case, I'd have been a heck of a player.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like the
for
old
them,
saying,
but
it's like
the guys old saying that have that.
You have to have the physical tool. Yeah. It's the same situation as you got to have the players to win. But having players doesn't mean you're going to win big. But if you don't have them, you don't have a chance. That's it. And so, listen, they got enough players to win right now based on what I've seen. How do you put them together? Is the chemistry work? I really think the offensive system is going to help that offensive line group.
I really like that in this – and, look, we'll learn more about everyone's team, over the next few months.
I'll know by next November what people have.
And there's a lot of positivity around the conference. This is the season. This is the era of that. But – I kind of like that. I mean, look, you're going to Tuscaloosa, you're going to Athens. That happens every other year, and those two teams are in pretty good position right now as far as where they're going. Are either of them as good as they were 5 years ago? It's up for some debate, but they both those are those are very, very difficult games until further notice, going to Tuscaloosa, yeah. going to Athens. Outside of that, especially having gotten rid of division play, like, and because of how much change happened from the end of last season to now, everyone else on Auburn's schedule is kind of a dice roll. Like, they're all starting over, and they're all moving on from new. Like who knows what LSU looks like next year? Who knows what Ole Miss looks like in the first year of the? I mean, it sounds like Trinidad's going to play, which is good news for them. But and even like early in the schedule, Auburn's got Vandy and Florida, right? Hey, who are in very
you have no idea. That's the thing, though. You just don't know. You mentioned Alabama, Georgia. I'm like, will they still be talented? Yes. Are they as talented as they were 5 years ago? No, they're not, because you don't have the depth you had. You lose backup guys. It's just different now. And listen, I thought 2 years ago, I thought that was as much in a game in Athens and in Tuscaloosa as an Auburn team had been in the last decade. Mm. I thought you were as close as you've been in those two situations as you've been in a long time. Now, can you get over the hump? Can you do those things? We'll find out. But I do think that, this is a roster mention. We mentioned a lot of guys, and there's a lot more we can talk about. But so far, I'm going, hey, I like the way they're kind of doing things.
I like what you said a while ago, Jason. I agree. I mean, the competition, I mean, they're guys that look like they can compete, and you'll be fine if this one or the other one wins. It doesn't have to be, this guy.
Yeah, I thought, and I said, look, I don't think you're as good from 1 to 10 on the roster as you were last year. I thought you're more talented. Mm-hmm. But I think 1 to 50,
yeah.
you're better. And to me, that's a key.
One of your 10 this year is your quarterback. And I don't think that was true.
Oh, it was not true.
I don't know. Like, if you did an honest list last year of 1 to 50 on the Auburn roster, I don't know how far you would rank players before you got to your first quarterback.
It'd be a while.
This year's team.
Yeah. You might go talent. You might go Deuce from a talent standpoint, might have been in there, but you never saw him.
No.
And so you couldn't put him in that list.
All right. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, come on in and join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, as we continue a couple of more segments with Jason here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. It's sort of a carryover during the break of Brian's visit when we do his musical musings. But yeah, we're having a good time here. Jason Caldwell in the studio with us. We talked a little football. Let's talk a little basketball because Auburn's got a matchup with Illinois State tomorrow. We were talking with Andy yesterday, and I had forgotten Andy's resume. That's where he started.
That's where he started. That's right. Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. Like, your play, this is as Cinderella as it gets. This left play anywhere playing basketball right now. They were a 4 seed in a region and won road games. I mean, they won it at Wake Forest and won at Dayton, and been playing really well. And listen, they got a big dude that's going to create a problem. Chase Walker.
6'9", 280.
6'9", 290 or something. Yeah, so he's huge.
Oh, he's gained 10.
Yes.
goodness.
But he's in 3 NIT games, 15.7 points, 7 rebounds, 70% from the floor, from two-point range.
Now, the guy is, again, he's another foul magnet. He's a guy that seems to just draw fouls and get to the free throw line.
Yeah, and, so if you're Auburn, you got to do a good job of containing him. But this is a team that's playing with a lot of confidence right now. Really good defensive team so far, but of course, so was the last team they played, and Auburn played really well. But the interesting thing about this one is that you're going to play in an NIT game, and there's probably going to be 10,000 Illinois State fans.
It is definitely a road type
experience
for Auburn tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's gonna be because
they're like 2.5 hours away or something.
It's going to be a challenge. It is, and so that'll be That'll be an interesting one to watch and see, what the crowd's like, how Auburn handles that. But listen, they played 3 games, won 3 games, and it feels like they've honestly built up a little bit of a rhythm for the first time since early in the season of how this team's going to play. Done it without Keyshawn Murphy, but Jovich and Sway have done a good job of kind of rotating and being the only bigs on the team right now. But they're going to have to play physical and avoid fouls tomorrow night. That's going to be a huge key for them.
Yeah, it has been, I think, really good for Auburn, though. You didn't want to be without Keyshawn Murphy, but I think it's really been good for Phillip and Sway to have this.
Figure it out.
They have to get out there and play.
Figure it out, and I think they've done a good job of that. And that's the thing about it is both those guys are strong and they're physical. The flip side of that matchup is that a guy that's 6'9", 280 or 290 is going to have to guard one of those two guys. And that can be an advantage. I'm like,
they are both really athletic.
They're athletic. And we saw Jovich put it on the floor the other night and take the ball to the basket, do some stuff. And so there's going to be an opportunity. We know Sway. Like, Sway is almost a guard with the ball in his hands. You'll have an opportunity to bring that guy out away from the basket some, too. And I think that could be something that you can take advantage of offensively.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. They also, Jason, are a team that is a pretty good three-point shooting team, and Auburn's had problems with that, all year.
They have, and so you look and you go big man inside and guys that can shoot the three, that creates problems. So for Auburn, you just wonder kind of offensively what they do and the switches that you can get. You don't need to have Tahad switched up with a guy that's 6'9", 290 pounds, and we've seen some of that early this season.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does it create easy baskets, but it also then you're matching up a big outside. It's kind of the same game we've played all season long with this Auburn team, though. If you look up at the end of the game and the other team's made 15 threes, you probably lost.
Right.
When they've limited opponents of shooting the three, they've won the majority of those games. It's been when the other team just starts to light it up from three and that's a situation for most everybody. It's been a huge part of this season for this basketball team.
Seems like they've done an okay job, for the most part in this tournament of defending the 3-point line, and that's, I think that for this team that started with keeping the ball out of the paint and keeping it from keeping the defense from collapsing and giving guys open looks from the outside. And you haven't seen as much of that in this tournament. I thought the defense they played against Nevada was some of the best you've seen from them all season long, right? I mean, Nevada's got 20-something points, like pretty deep into the game.
I really think that the last couple of ball games for most of the game, till right at the very end when there's been a flurry, of a flurry by both teams, that's been about as good as Auburn's played defensively all year.
Been a while, and I do think it's some of that is, listen, they're more athletic than most of the guys they're playing in this tournament.
That's true.
And it helps. I mean, that's part of this, and that's – can you do that tomorrow night if you're Auburn? Because you're going to be the more athletic team. You're going to be probably longer. They're not as big, but you're going to be a quicker, more explosive team. Mm-hmm. You've had some time now. Can you show that in transition game? Can you rebound and get the ball off the glass and take advantage of that? That'll be a big deal for this one, because if you can do some of those things, then all of a sudden it puts a lot of pressure on Illinois State to have to score and have to answer.
Yeah, no question. Now, Auburn's already made a move toward next year's roster. I mean, we've talked, for the last few weeks about retaining players and adding to them. Well, Auburn's already got the first player that they're adding to the roster next year, going international, bringing in Narcisse Goy from France.
Yeah, 7-footer. We'll see if he's a freshman, a sophomore, junior, whatever his classification is going to be. I mean, we'll figure that out.
I
don't know. I don't know how the NCAA determines that.
Because I saw somebody posted that he'd have 3 years of eligibility. Yeah, and I'm like,
I don't know. I guess they figured out, if maybe because of how much school he had done in the secondary level. Maybe, I don't know. I don't have any idea how it works. But, listen, big, long, athletic guy. Has some Walker Kessler vibes a little bit because of his length and because it's a pick and roll. Mm-hmm. He's not a guy that's going to put the ball on the floor and stand outside and shoot threes.
He's also not a stick.
He's got some size.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, he's 21 years old. So he's grown up, matured a little bit. But this is a big deal just from a rim protector standpoint. Defensively, gives you a guy that can play in the paint and he can score and do some things too. But he's not going to be a guy that fits in a five out system like we saw them do a lot of this year with Keyshawn Murphy, and we saw him even do it with Broom the last couple of years. I don't think he's that kind of player. It feels more like pick and roll Walker Kessler type action with Narcisse when he's on the floor.
Now we were talking yesterday, and I still wouldn't I sort of expect Auburn to look for another guy to help him inside as well as a point or at least a combo.
I think right now in my opinion, I think you go proven big in at this level.
Yeah, an experienced big.
It doesn't have to be a guy that's an all world guy. A guy that's look athletic body type, because I mean you look at Michigan and everybody talks about, you know, what they've done. Obviously Yaxel Lindenberg.
Bringing in Yax, but I mean he's playing a three for
but
him.
That's it. And so you look at you know, one of the, you know, the biggest, I mean obviously they go get Mara and he's a big guy, but he wasn't a standout. He was a guy that had done some things for them. But you start talking about this team and Merez Johnson may be as important as anybody for what Michigan's done. He was, you know, 6'9", 250. And you go, man, yeah, he's been really good for them. He averaged 13 points a game at Illinois. And you go like, no, excuse me, that was it. That's in Michigan this year. At Illinois last year, played in 30 games with 8 starts and averaged 7 points a game. And now you look at him, doubled that at Michigan, playing on a team that I think is the best team in the country right now. That's what you're looking for. A guy that's got some experience, is looking to become a bigger part of things,
right,
and has that body and athleticism. If you can find that guy, I agree. I think a point, and I think a true shooter. If you could do that and keep the nucleus of these guys, and I think that's Sway, I think that's Jovich, I think that's Freeman, I think that's Overton. It doesn't feel like Tahad's going to come back for this team. Maybe I'm wrong. But if you kept those four guys and you add a point, a true shooter,
Another big
to go along, and that gives you 8 guys.
Yeah.
And then you bring back a couple guys that
then
are
you
key
see if,
guys,
if
role
Mac
players,
or correct, you know, any of the other guys might be able to get in there.
That,
and give
that
a
feels
more.
Like a
whole lot better than 6.5 that
feels,
Auburn had this year.
That feels like a roster that pieces start to put together a little bit, and you get guys for a second year.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Back to wind things down with Jason as we continue here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Looking for
The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes here of hour number one. As Jason Caldwell with us here as he is most Wednesdays. JC, talk a little bit about everything that's going on. We've mentioned football, basketball, and baseball still all, you know, still going on. There's plenty of news there. I mean, recruiting,
it doesn't slow down.
No, there is a ton. This is a very busy time of year.
Yeah, this is the busiest time of year. You're right. Recruiting's been – they've got a bunch of guys in every day.
They sure have. They've got an awful lot of very high profile players to at least come in.
And that's the key. I talked to a couple of guys the other day, and I said, listen, you can talk to a bunch of coaches that were here. Auburn will recruit itself. Get guys on campus, and you keep getting them back. Now, obviously, there's something else in play.
Oh, yeah. They're,
but I think you can get yourself in the hunt and then kind of figure it out from there. But – if you get guys back on campus, this is a place that kids normally want to come back to and see more of. And I think the energy they've shown, obviously facilities, those are things that will put you in the picture now. And obviously, you know, NIL is a big part of it. We know it is, but you got to get in the picture to begin with. And I think they're doing a good job of that so far.
All right. So just let everybody know how they can keep up with everything, because you guys have got it all covered.
Yep. Check us out, auburnundercover.com. Obviously part of the 24/7 network. And if you haven't ever signed up before, we got a spring practice special that's still on the front page right now. So you can subscribe, do that. Paramount Plus is included.
Yes,
which is a big part of that as well. But yeah, all the social media platforms can find us there. But yeah, really busy. Nathan will have basketball coverage, and doing that, we'll have some football coverage and see what we can gather from the scrimmage on Thursday night. Obviously, baseball.
You got baseball,
don't
you?
I'll have baseball coverage with Andy Gone. So I'll have that at least the first couple of days, and we'll see if basketball can win another one. I'll have all 3 days this weekend.
Hope you got all three.
That'd be nice. It'd be nice to do that and then get a few more wins this weekend in every sport.
That would be nice. Jason, it's always great to have you in, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we are done with hour number one. Adam Cole joins us in hour number two, and Coach Gene Chizik joins us at 5:30. So we've got a fun show for the rest of the way. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this Wednesday. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell, who spent hour number one with us. Jason getting back late from Atlanta last night, was at Butch Thompson's media opportunity a little earlier today, and he'll be back behind the mic again along with Brad Law for at least the first two games of the Auburn-Arkansas series, while he is also, you know, helping cover everything else that's going on in Auburn.
I meant to ask about this during the commercial break. Baseball and basketball tomorrow simultaneously?
Basketball is going to be right here on ESPN.
Okay, that's what I thought. So we're moving.
Baseball is going to be on Wayne. Since it's a conference game and this is post, you know, the post regular season and everything, yes, Auburn, Illinois State will be here on ESPN 106.7 tomorrow with the airtime at 8 o'clock and tip at sometime.
Yeah, that won't mess with the Drive schedule at all because we'll be off the air by then.
No, I was thinking, oh, maybe baseball's going to be on ESPN 106.7 and I'll be able to get out early and be over there for first pitch. So no, it's not going to work that way.
I was thinking maybe like, well, if basketball was the early game of the two NIT semis,
if basketball had been a 6 o'clock game, then yeah, we'd have been out of here at 5:30.
But that's not the way it's going to go down. But I'm glad you cleared that up. So Auburn Sports Network tomorrow, double duty. Wings 94.3 will have the first game of Auburn Arkansas, and right here on ESPN 106.7, we will have coverage of Auburn and Illinois State in the NIT semifinal.
Well, not just double duty, but it's triple duty for the guy that's now joining us here. He covers it all as far as Auburn athletics for the Montgomery Advertiser, and that's our buddy Adam Cole. Adam, how you doing, man?
Doing all right. No, been a good day, even after a late night.
Yeah, you were in Atlanta last night.
I was. Yeah, that was. I was talking to Jason and Brian Matthews about it. That's the first Auburn baseball game I've covered away from Plainsman Park that was not played at the Hoover Met.
I heard you talking about that yesterday on the way out, on the way out of football practice.
No, really cool venue. Not as cool of a game, I guess, depending on your rooting interests.
No,
but
not after the top of the second. That was pretty much it.
Yeah, that was it pretty much. I mean, it was Brian and I were talking about it in the box, and I'm sure Jason touched on it a little bit too. But I think it was 17 of Auburn's last 18 batters retired by Georgia Tech. It was just
they didn't get a hit right after that second inning.
Bristol Carter had a walk. I want to say it was in the seventh inning, but yeah, no, they couldn't do anything. So yeah, it was another one just in the, you know, I guess that's four straight now, but not much of a return or an improvement on that one heading into a really big weekend against Arkansas.
Yeah, four straight, six out of seven, and the bats, I mean, are the big concern, and that's something really heading into the season. I was not concerned about that because I looked out there and I felt like, oh, they've got 11, 12 guys that can swing the bat well enough to be in an everyday lineup.
And I think they still do.
Oh, I think they do too.
I just there's so much about it I wonder about, whether it's the amount of youth, whether it's the power potential that you really thought you had with this lineup that hasn't come to fruition yet. I wonder if there's been some things as far as the approach goes that maybe they've tried to lock in on that just haven't worked for the sake of that. You know, they need to figure something out for sure, but it was interesting, too, looking at it heading into today. Through three weekends last year, Auburn was 4-5 against the SEC.
Right.
had lost four straight heading into their first series in April, and then went on to win seven of their next eight. I know that's, you know, you can't make a direct comparison between two teams that are, you know, obviously different, but I think that's some food for thought for people who maybe are just being frustrated and maybe a little impatient on that level, because I've seen a good bit of that. But there's still, you know, there's still 26 games left, and it'll be interesting to see when and how they can turn it around at the plate for sure.
And I think an offensive breakthrough last night wouldn't have solved everything, because you still have the concerns about how the team has hit the ball. And I thought Jason made a good point. Like, you can point to the five-game losing streak in SEC play, but really outside of what, a handful of at-bats against Missouri in the
– One big inning, really, against Missouri. Auburn didn't hit the ball that well in that series. They swept, but it was because of the pitching.
And you hope they can turn that around. I think the longer you go without turning it around, it seems like it's – and the fact that it's not one or two players you're talking about, it seems like it's a – outside of Frelick and Rembert to an extent, like it's a pretty the lineup wide problem.
Yeah. It is
right now.
It is. I mean, that the whole team has gone into a slump.
Yeah, you look at it, I think through SEC play so far, you've only got four guys who are batting above 200 right now, and
you don't have anybody with 20 at bats that's hitting 250.
Right, right. Like, you don't,
or over 250, right?
No, yeah. I mean, the only batter with over 250 is got 18 at bats.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's Lucas Steele, and he's at 278, and then Frelick and Guevara are hitting 250, and Rembert's at 242. It's going to take a lot, because, you know, it would look a lot different, I think, if you had even just, you know, maybe two guys in the lineup who weren't being affected by this and doing really well. I think that'd be enough, but you're going to have to find somebody who's at least stringing it together to start, and then hopefully, whether that's in the same game or the same inning or whenever it is, you can try to catch a little more fire with it. But yeah, they really, like, it is very much lineup wide. I mean, even a guy like Brandon McCrane, who's batting 350 something on the year, he's hitting 179 right now against the SEC. And you know, you need somebody to turn it around in a hurry, for sure.
Adam, you're a baseball guy, and I mean, I've followed baseball for a long time, and it's crazy, but this is baseball. Teams, it is crazy how teams can go on hot streaks, and everybody or almost all the lineup gets hot, and the same thing can happen when they get cold. You'll see it sometimes. Auburn has almost seen it with the pitching. You see it, I mean, even in the majors, where all of a sudden one guy throws a shutout, the next guy comes out and throws a shutout. It's like, it's almost contagious. It's crazy. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But that's just baseball.
And that's why, like, I'm, you know, you can't not be concerned about what you're seeing at the plate right now. Like,
it's got to change.
You know it's got to change, but I don't know that I would say that I've reached a point where, like, I wouldn't say I'm totally, like, in complete worry yet about it, especially with it being the lineup, you know, and just the, like you said, hitting is contagious for better or worse, and I think all it can take is one game, one inning,
sometimes
one swing.
Sometimes just a couple of little bleeders or bloops to just fall in and just loosen the guys up. That's why I mentioned it to Jason earlier. That's why I was sort of wanting to have a little fun with Butch and wanted to say, you know, maybe just something to try to get the guys to have a little fun, lighten up just a little bit. Because, you know, right now, a lot of it, they're just pressing. They're squeezing the bat too tight.
Yeah, and again, I go back to the power aspect of it, because I think the power potential is still very much there for this team.
I'm really surprised.
I feel like I'm seeing different, much different at bats than what I've seen in a general sense from Butch's Auburn team since I've covered them. I feel like I've seen a lot of really patient approaches, a lot of really impressive two strike hitting. That's always been their best hitters, and you know, I think Jason pointed it out last night. Chris Rembert, I think, went 0 for 5 last night, or 0 for 4. 0 for 4 on, I think it was 5 pitches.
Yeah.
And I think for Auburn, you know, obviously I'm not the guy out there, you know, suiting up and making the lineup card and coaching the team. But, you know, if you can get back to, you know, whether it's get back to or settle yourself into an approach that's way more based in those patient at-bats, working deep counts, getting contact, being really impressive, hitting with two strikes, I think that power is going to come. If you can take that approach and find success with it, I think the power comes by way of that, and you'll be able to unlock a whole lot more. But to me, like, we'll see how it looks this weekend. I think Arkansas is a weirdly interesting, in a good way, matchup for Auburn, just considering how they've looked of late. They've given up a lot of hits, a lot of runs. But I think the biggest thing for them is, like, you got to go back to kind of that contact first approach, and you know, being able to just get on base and put it in play, and, you know, I guess hit it where they ain't more than anything.
I mean, beyond, because you still have, especially when you factor in on base, right? Like, you still have some guys, Steele, Frelick, Guevara, where you don't feel like it's an urgent necessity. Like, the production you're getting from them doesn't strike you compared to when you get further down in conference play into.
Well,
I mean, Bub and Mason would be the two.
Bub and Mason and Brandon lately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
And with Bub and Mason, you also have the issue of, like, walks to strikeouts too, because I think Bub in particular has. I mean,
yeah. I think they're almost both almost half the time. I think in conference, Mason maybe 11 out of 23 strikeouts. Bub's 15 for 32.
Yep.
15 Ks and 32.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Bristol Carter too. I mean, Bristol Carter's hitting.
Oh my goodness, he's the guy that's got to be your right, spark play. He's the igniter.
Right.
And I mean, he just he's really struggled. He's hitting, like, he's hitting 130.
He's hitting 130 right now. Yeah, and 310 OBP, which, you know, isn't the worst.
That's
on
not
the team,
terrible, but, especially with a 130 batting average.
Right. You know, but for him, and it's one of those things that's interesting too. Just, like, off the hip thinking about it, like, I don't know that I'd necessarily want him to change his approach to find more success necessarily, because I think when it's on, like, it gives that team so much juice. But he's another guy too that just really you'd love to see him turn it around. And you know, the one guy too that I'm really interested to watch is, he just gets more at bats. He's only got 9 in SEC play right now. I know he played against South. He obviously played against Tech last night, but Eddie Madrigal too is just a guy who, you know, in practice too, continues to look the part. And I think just the more at bats he gets, I'll be really curious to see if they can find a nucleus or a spark plug in a turnaround. Like, I'd be willing to bet he's at the top of the list of guys who really kind of help right the course and you know, steer the ship back on track.
Yeah, as a team, you're slugging 282 in 9 SEC games, 3 homers and 11 doubles. That's your those are your extra base hits.
Butch was talking about that today. I mean, the slugging and the extra base hits are just it's shocking how few there are of the extra base hits, and Auburn's always been a team with a pretty good team slugging percentage. Yeah. They may not hit the most home runs, but, man, they used to double you to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it'd be alley power, and you'd figure, you know, we saw guys like Ike, as they got a little more mature, the ball's going to carry and they're going to get more home runs. Yeah. That's what I was thinking this year from the guys, you know, from the returning the sophomores, and just figured this was a team that would have plenty of pop, but we just haven't seen it.
Ike's development to me is kind of a good example of where I think Auburn kind of needs to go, whether it's, you know, individualistic or the whole lineup. That was a guy who, you know, this was what made him special as a freshman, was he had a great approach at the plate. He had a great eye. Mm-hmm. He could hit really well with two strikes. And, you know, as he settled in over year two and year three, I mean, you saw that he could hit the ball anywhere he needed to. But I remember writing a story on him his freshman year and having a great long talk with Gabe Gross about him and just, like, the stuff that he already had and what they were trying to pull out of him. And it was, you know, you've got that foundation of being able to hit for contact and being able to get on base and fight in that way. And eventually it's like, we've got all that figured out. And now what we're trying to get him to do is, you know, figure out and learn, okay, when he's dealing with maybe more inside pitches in particular too, just getting that pull side power and going from there. And that was kind of the next step. And you saw it a little more as a sophomore, and you saw it a lot, you know, last season, like you said. I mean, as he put on more weight, as he got more at bats, that ball just carried more. And, you know, I forget what the numbers were, but I'm pretty sure he left last season with a career high in homers, if not right around it. But,
yeah, I remember in conference, especially on the road, it seemed like, you know, he was homering all the time on the road last year in conference. No.
And I mean, and it does feel like, but I mean, with both, like, with you, Adam, and with Bill, and with, we talked to Brian, we talked to Jason, it's like, people who watch this team a lot, it's like, we don't have answers as to how this, how this thing.
Well, if I mean, the thing is, Butch is what, you know, they're all hoping to find. They feel like the solutions are there. You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's not time to just scrap these guys plug 9 other guys in the lineup.
No, and that's not to say that, like, you know, I know exactly how the plan should change, but what I'm saying is, like, right now, I have no idea how this thing turns out between now and the end of the SEC. Like, could the bats wake up and could Auburn
they should,
get close?
But that doesn't – that there's no guarantees.
Yeah, right. And it's not like this is the major league season and you've got 160 or something of these games to figure out. Like, well, you've got 21 SEC games left.
Right.
And you probably need to – what are they, four and five?
Mm-hmm. 4-5.
I mean, you need to win 9 of them. Probably to feel really good about your chances of making.
Well, I'll tell you what: if you want to host a regional, you better go 11-10 in those 21 games at least. You know, you need to be 500, I think, in conference to be hosting a regional.
So while it is true that there is time between now and the end of the season, I would still say like the clock's ticking. You know, especially with a home series this weekend,
right?
Because if this slump is like if we open Monday's show. Talking about the offensive woes continuing and a lost series to Arkansas, it only gets tougher, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, right now we're talking about needing to win 9 or 10 of 21. That could be needing to win, you need to win
10 of 18 or 11 of 18, something like that.
Like it's, you know, the odds can continue to shift against you. If the bats don't wake up.
Yeah, no. And again, I think we'll see how it goes. Did you guys see any of the Arkansas-Missouri State midweek game last night?
No, I did not.
I believe Missouri State walked it off 15-14. And
ooh.
Arkansas hit, I want to say it was in the 7th or 8th inning, hit a go-ahead grand slam. They played in Springfield. It looked electric. But over these last four for Arkansas, they've given up 38 runs on 51 hits in their last four that they've lost. And, you know, by comparison, in 9 games, Auburn has 60 hits against SEC play.
It's the movable object and the resistible, the resistible force.
Yeah,
it's like
no.
I mean, because Auburn struggled hitting and they've struggled pitching. So
yeah.
So that's hopefully that's a good matchup for Auburn.
I think you can be relatively optimistic. Now again, like I don't know, and you know, Butch said this today. Like this is the first time he's really felt like going into a weekend the focus is more on us and what we need to do as opposed to, you know, breaking down the opponent just as much. But you know, I think you still keep that approach, right? You don't necessarily go in there and say, look, they've been giving up all this, like go out there and, you know, slug like crazy. You know, you try to stay within yourself. But if you can find some success this weekend, I think you've got a pesky matchup next weekend, but still another probably ideal matchup for the sake of your bats, because the lineup on the other side isn't necessarily going to slug you out of the park in Kentucky. But no, this weekend, I mean, you've got the opportunity right there to turn it around, and it's Arkansas. You know, they're always going to be Arkansas for the most part, but I think you're probably catching them at the right time, a little bit like kind of that LSU series last year.
I mean, it's a very big series for both teams. I mean, they've lost 4 straight conference games too. I mean, they're struggling. It's not just Pitt. They've got to be concerned every time. Have we scored enough?
Yeah.
I mean, like Auburn's like, we can't give up a run, and they're thinking we can't stop scoring.
Yeah, no. So it's very much like it's just polar kind of ends of the struggle spectrum right now. But
and for two teams that not all that long ago pictured themselves in the hunt for the SEC regular season title, it's like the loser of the series this weekend, like that bubble is pretty close to bursting, and you're starting to have to play for your tournament life. Mm-hmm. You know, you've moved to, you're back to bubble town, Bill, you know, after talking about it, after talking
about it a lot in basketball,
talking about a lot in February, it's like, you're back to the tournament bubble. And that's something I think considering what's most shocking of all is that for a team that brought back as many pieces that you felt good about in the lineup, like for a team that hit on freshmen and retained them and thought, oh, we'll wait until you see what our younger guys can do, and went and added some guys they felt pretty good about too. It's like you would think that if Auburn found themselves in this position, 5-game SEC losing streak, losing record in conference through 9 games, like you would think it was the pitching that had let Auburn down or that had failed to deliver. Yeah. Auburn's been in position to win several of these games they lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not the pitching.
No, it has been. Well, that's baseball though. It's been what you didn't expect. Let's get to our first break here of hour number 2. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan joined by Adam Cole here in hour number two. We've got another special guest going to join us in just a little while. Former Auburn coach Gene Chizik going to be calling in on the Drive hotline. He's going to be speaking at a breakfast coming up, and we'll let him talk about that. And we'll probably bounce a couple of football questions off of him as well. So looking forward to that. Before we get to the bottom of the hour, what do you want to talk about next? Want to get into football or basketball, Dan?
I mean, Adam, you were able to. Did you go to the viewing window yesterday? I don't know if you.
He was there.
Yeah, I was there on the other side of the floor. You were there. Mm-hmm. What's piqued your interest about spring football so far, and what do you find yourself watching when you're out there for the viewing windows?
You know, I think yesterday
the music
more than anything. The music, the phrases on the walls. No,
the companionship.
The companionship. Yesterday, you know, I think we're kind of hitting that point where it's like you just kind of figure out who we're talking to and kind of focusing in on them. And the O-line, I think, you know, was obviously the topic of yesterday. And I think we saw, who was it? We talked to Ty Buster yesterday, and he's been getting
first. And Jack Lehrer.
Mm-hmm, and Jack Lehrer. But he's been getting first team reps. Saw Wilson Zaire too get a little bit of first team reps.
He's a guy we didn't get a chance to mention that with Jason, but he's obviously a guy that has really impressed as a true freshman coming in because Coach Golish talked about him, mentioned him when we had a chance to talk to him for a little bit, and then he was out there running a good bit with the ones yesterday.
Yeah, no, and I wonder too. Like I think it was the first. Maybe not the first story, but the first feature story I wrote when I got to Montgomery. I talked to Malik Blockton about the fact that, hey, you had a brother who played here, who's in the NFL now. How much of a leg up does that give you? And, you know, I wonder, you know, it's probably a little different with Marcus Harris, but obviously having somebody who has played here and been in the building as your brother, like, I wonder what kind of fast track that can put you on, if any. But I think it was certainly a good sign to see both, you know, Ty Buster and him. The other one, too, that I'm really a lot more interested in now, because when they got him, it was towards the end of the portal window, and he didn't play much at all last year. And it was just kind of like, well, you know, he's probably a depth piece. But Derek Plaz,
yeah,
you know, that's and heck of a name, too, you know, between the name itself and the spelling. But he was out there in first rotation as well. I think you saw Cole Skinner a little bit out there, too, in first rotation. I'm curious to see what his role is this year, because he was largely just kind of a platoon reserve guy at South Florida last year. But I wonder if he can crack the first team. But, you know, was looking at that, you know, it seemed like there were a lot of drops yesterday too from the pass catchers. That was really kind of the other thing that caught my eye. And obviously it's one practice, right? You know, it's not baseball, but it's one practice where it was probably just fluky, but you had a little bit of that going on. But those were kind of the biggest things that stuck out yesterday. And of course, like, I read about it after the fact. I ran inside and went to the bathroom when it happened, but the Iron Bowl period.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was not out there for that, but that's certainly an interesting thing to see and hear and read about. You know, I don't think there should be many complaints about that. Not a bad thing to be focusing in on, you know, your biggest rival this early, but
and what that was. I mean, I think a lot of people have read about it, but I was on the far side right then because I couldn't really see who all was going. It was a lot of individual. It was one-on-one. It was you'd have a skill player with a ball in his hands and a tackler. And, I mean, they'd snap it and they'd be, all right, can you make the guy miss or is he going to take you to the ground?
Okay.
I mean, it was that's what that was. Dan, you may have had a little better angle. Were you on the side or on one of the ends?
I was over by the receivers when they were doing
Because when they did that, I mean, they just lined them up sort of down the middle of the field. You had quite a few different pairings, and it would be, all right, the ball's in somebody's hand, can the other guy take him down?
Okay.
And I was having a tough time being behind the defender. I could see who the defender was, but I couldn't tell who had the ball a lot of the time. I just see somebody's got the ball, somebody's being tackled.
So it was a bit of an Oklahoma drill situation?
Yeah, okay. It was a good and physical.
That's
and
electric.
With Dixie and Delight blasting.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think that's great. I think it was Ty Buster who kind of talked about it, but he phrased it kind of interestingly, and like in the literal sense, I don't know that it makes much sense, but in the metaphorical sense, like I get it. He was talking about like just trying to get ahead of winning games now, like at this point in the year when you're still obviously months away from playing. But he kind of used the example of, you know, during non-con last year. I mean, Auburn looked as good as it did against Baylor. And then you play Ball State, and that's just I think that all, as we saw, was just more indicative of how bad Ball State was. And South Alabama, you did enough to win, but it was kind of, you know, it was fine.
You know what? But even in those games after Baylor, like the fact that you couldn't throw the ball was like a red flag that you could dismiss it by saying, well, how much did you need to throw the ball? Like you'll be ready when the ammo, you know, when it's time to fire for real. But it turned out that wasn't the case.
Right. And then you get to SEC play, and it looked like that.
All right. Tell you what we'll do. We'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break because I believe Coach Chizik's going to be calling us. Is that who we got? All right. We're going to go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break, and we'll check in with the Chiz when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
BNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and we've got Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio with us. But right now, very special guest joining us on The Drive Hotline. It's been a while. But we're glad to welcome back former Auburn coach Gene Chizik joining us here on The Drive. Coach, how you doing today?
Gentlemen, I am doing amazing. I hope you guys are as well, and thanks for having me on today.
Oh, absolutely. Mike let us know that you're speaking at a breakfast for Kevin Flanagan next, I guess, just a week from today, right?
Yeah, guys, it's really going to be a great event. So it's the Edge, it's the Challenge, the Edge Ministry Challenge Breakfast at the Auburn Hotel and Conference Center a week from today. So it's going to be a breakfast April 8th, Wednesday morning. People are going to start trickling in about 6:30 and grabbing got an incredible buffet there with great breakfast food. And people are going to come in and start trickling in about 6:30. Program will probably get started right around 7. I'm going to be the speaker, and it's going to be a great morning, and then everybody should be out of there before 8 o'clock. But, yes, it's the Edge Ministry, which essentially, you know, learning how to, you know, grow a kingdom business, right? And Kevin Flanagan has done an amazing job starting this ministry years ago. I truly believe in it. I'm on the board. But I believe in, you know, having a faith-based business, you know, and trying to bring the kingdom every day and how we live and how we do our job and how we honor God by doing our job well. And I think it's a great ministry. So, man, I hope everybody hears about it, comes on out. I know tables are filling up fast. They might even all be gone right now. But if not, see if you can find somebody. Buy a table if there's any left. And if not, try to join somebody at their table because it's going to be a great morning.
Gene, do you know how folks would go about doing that if they would be interested? I mean, how do they find that info?
Well, I think they could go on the Edge Ministry website because I think it'll spell it all out on there. Kevin Flanagan is obviously the gentleman that started this ministry.
Sure.
But I think if you go to the Edge Ministry website, they're going to tell you and direct you how to buy a table, potentially, and if not, I'm sure that they'll be able to direct you on, you know, how to, you know, come to the event. Look, it's just going to be a great community event, and I really encourage everybody in the Auburn and Opelika area, if you're not doing anything that morning or before work, it's going to be a great word, and God's going to speak through me, and I'm excited about it.
Exciting stuff, and we will before we let you go, we'll give you a chance to talk about it again. But there's a lot been going on here in the Auburn area when it comes to football in the last couple of months, Coach. And I'd love to know sort of your initial impressions of Alex Golish of the job he's done so far since taking the position and your thoughts on how things may go for Auburn's new head coach.
Well, I'm excited about the hire. And, you know, Alex is a very young, energetic kind of guy. He's a workhorse. He's a guy that, you know, got to this position. He got to this seat because of his work ethic, being a smart, innovative young football coach. Obviously did a great job as the OC at a couple different places. You know, being under Josh Heupel at Tennessee and then going out on his own in the job that he did at South Florida. And, you know, kind of the progression that he made when he got to South Florida of building that program, I think he inherited something that was somewhat of a disaster. And there you were three years later beating Florida at Florida and going on to have an incredible turnaround. But I think he's one of these young, smart, bright guys. I think he's exactly what I think Auburn embraces, a guy that's all about no-nonsense, a guy that's about hard work, a guy that's hard-nosed. This day and age, you know, coaches sometimes because of the NIL and the, you know, the ability for guys to jump in and out of the transfer portal, they'll fudge a little bit on what they believe in and, you know, the discipline and the things that are still necessary to win. I don't think he's going to worry about that. I think he's going to worry about, you know, being a disciplined coach, being a hard-nosed coach, the messaging that I think he's bringing to Auburn, the people, it will resonate with the people. And I like the hire. Now, let's be honest. Every single coach in this league, well, let me rephrase that. Every single coach in this country that was hired new this year, everybody's in a prove-it pattern. You don't know exactly what you're going to get with anybody because when you have teams that are so fluid and change completely complexion-wise from one year to the next, you don't know what you're going to get. But the guys that are be able to navigate this new football world with the transfer portal and the NFL and the NIL combined, the guys that can handle that the best and handle their football team. This is still a people sport. It's still a communication game. You still got to be able to have great communication rapport with the players, yet hold them accountable. Sometimes there's a very fine line for that, but I think Alex is the right guy for the job, and I think the people need to be understanding that, you know, the turnarounds that you see at Indiana are unicorns. Can they be done? Yes. It's putting pressure on a lot of new guys.
Oh, yes.
But those are definitely exceptions to the rule, and you got to give Alex some time.
Talking with Gene Chizik here on the Wednesday Drive with Bill, Dan, and Alex Cole of the Montgomery Advertiser is along with us as well. Gene, you got right into what I wanted to get your thoughts on. And, you know, you now having to navigate the waters that college athletics has changed so drastically here over the last decade with the advent of NIL and now the transfer portal allowing players to transfer anytime they want makes it so much more difficult. I mean, I'm not saying that, boy, the job you had or anybody else who has coached before this was easy, but it seems like you've added just another layer to this where now you're seeing complete organizations with general managers and having to have so much more staffing to keep an eye on and a finger on the pulse of just thousands of players who could be jumping in and constantly having to re-recruit your own players on a nearly daily basis.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a point that's well-recognized across the country, and I know, you know, still being in the TV realm and talking to a lot of coaches pretty frequently. You know, look, the combination of the NIL and the transfer portal is definitely, the combination is deadly. I mean, it's really making this almost a nearly impossible task, right? Who comes up with the most money and the best players is really kind of the king right now. You're talking about schools out there that have raised $40 million this year, you know, and things of that nature. But let me just, Tommy Tuberville said this the other day, and I didn't read the article, but I think he was on to exactly what the way I feel. This is, you can solve a good bit of this because the real problem starts with the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the transfer portal is allowing people, for a lack of a better word, to extort schools. It's that simple. If I have a good year, pay me or I'm leaving. Well, in a sense, that's extortion, right? So if you somehow or another in the NCAA, and there's a lot of smart minds that are commissioners like Greg Sankey and a lot of powerful people in college football, they have to figure out exactly how to do this. But the transfer portal is the first problem, because if I have one transfer, because everybody could make a mistake, right? Everybody could need that mulligan because they went to school A, they thought they were going to have three quarterbacks, but they got there and they had five. I can see maybe I'm not as good. Give me a transfer. I'm good with that. But give me four transfers, and I'm not good with that. I'm not good with that on a lot of levels. I'm not good on that with the life lessons that it teaches. I'm not good with that because you can take your bat and ball and go home anytime you want.
Right.
But if you give me one mulligan, then that means that what I'm doing is playing well, extorting you for more money, and if you don't give it, I go somewhere else. Well, everything is supply and demand. When you start commanding these type of prices for wide receivers, quarterbacks, offensive linemen, pass rushers, right, then the value in the market goes up. Well, what does that mean? Schools got to raise more money, because it's that piece that's driving the prices up for everybody, because they play well, they ask for more money, you don't give it, and now they made $500,000 at school A, next year they're making $1 million. And then they play well at that school, and then the next time they're going to make $2 million. And I can go on and on and on. Well, you can see how that is really an unsustainable method in terms of trying to pay these players. And I don't have a problem with these players, through name, image, and likeness, making money, but not the way it's happening right now, because starting with how the transfer portal is allowing these guys every year to play at four different schools. And don't get me started on the fact that education has become a secondary to, you know, way down the line thought.
It's sort of an afterthought.
I don't agree with that either.
Right, right. And
I don't agree with that either.
And former Auburn D-line coach Don Dunn is on with us quite a bit. He's one of our regular co-hosts. And one of the things that he and you and so many coaches that I've talked to and known through the years are in this business, get in the business because you want to help develop young men, young kids into men and help them grow up. And it's really hard to have a relationship when they can be gone if they have a bad day.
That's right. And again, it's not only a yearly thing, to your point, it's a daily thing. And then all of a sudden, coaches can't really develop them because, A, they don't know if they're going to be there. And then, look, this is a man's game. And you got to coach these guys hard. You got to demand, you got to coach them hard. And now all of a sudden, you got to change your coaching philosophy because you hurt Freddie's feelings at practice that day, and he's going to go home and jump in the transfer portal. So it's just changed the whole dynamic of the game. But there's so many levels that are being affected that are making this game different than before. And look, all this being said, it's still the most popular game on the planet. It's never been more popular. But there are certain things that need to happen within this game so that we can bring this back. It's out of the bottle. The genie's out of the bottle. You're trying your best right now to mitigate, the damages moving forward. But the truth of the matter is the money that is being paid and has to be raised by these universities is just unsustainable. As long as these guys can command more money from any school the next year over and over and over, it continues to raise prices. And at one point, universities just can't make that type of money to be competitive. So that's where everything's got to get brought back to something that is doable. And right now it's not.
Talk with Auburn, former Auburn head coach Gene Chizik here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Coach, Gus Malzahn retired in the last couple of months, and news this week that he's going to be on the college football playoff committee. I remember covering the weeks following you getting the job back in late 2008, early 2009, and the excitement around the news that you had hired Gus Malzahn as your offensive coordinator when you took over as the head coach at Auburn. What do you remember about the decision to hire Gus Malzahn in the first place, and your thoughts on Coach Malzahn calling it a career and heading to the College Football Playoff Committee?
Well, you know, Gus was a very innovative guy, and back in the day, the SEC was not facing any offenses that posed the problems that Gus's offense posed, starting with tempo, starting with movement, starting with eye candy. He just did a great job with the misdirections. He did a great job with, you know, being able to hit guys on explosive plays. The tempo was really making defenses drag their tongue. And in 2009, when we took over, we had a team that had a lot of, you know, juniors on our football team that had played some ball, but we didn't have a lot of depth, and we felt like that could be the great equalizers against the Alabamas and LSUs and Georgias of the world, who had stacked defenses with, you know, 5 and 6 high round draft choices on their defense. So we had to find a way to, you know, kind of equalize it. So Gus's offense was kind of the great equalizer, and he was ahead of his time, and then so many people followed after that. But I think that was one of the reasons we had so much success early on. I think Gus had an incredible career. He realized over the last couple of years it was just time. The game had changed. I think he realized it was time. And, you know, you get to that point like I did 2 years ago, and you just kind of know it. And you know what? He can ride off into the sunset with an incredible career, both in high school and college. And, you know, the only thing that I'll say to Gus is that he jumped out of one fire and into another. that college football playoff committee, that's no joke either. They take more heat than anybody out there, but that's what they signed up for. But he'll enjoy that. I think that's going to be a fun thing for him to kind of keep busy and, you don't have to do it year-round. But I think he'll be really good at it, and he'll be a good voice of reason on that committee.
Coach, real quick, speaking of Coach Malzahn and your tenure here, Cody Burns on the staff as Auburn's receivers coach, a player you know very well, a guy who was a huge part of the 2009 and 2010 teams. Your thoughts on Cody returning home as part of the staff?
Well, I love Cody Burns, and he's one of my all-time favorite players, and I think that's an incredible hire by Alex. Now, the cool thing about it is him and Alex had a really good relationship before Alex got in the mix for this job, dating back to when Cody was a wide receiver coach at Tennessee. Cody's going to be a head coach. He's got the it factor. He had it as a player. The players around him, he brought the level of play up of everybody around him as a player. He just had it, and the players loved him. He was very selfless. And he's going to be a great sounding board for Alex, who's got to learn Auburn. Alex has got to learn Auburn, and Cody's going to be that guy that can really help him do that. But I think it was a tremendous hire. I think Cody is a home run. I think he is a rising star. I think sky's the limit. He will be a head coach in the next several years. But in the meantime, he can really, really enjoy being back home. You know, we've talked a couple different times through text since he got back. We're trying to get together when I come back into town here and there. I'm hoping to get him to the breakfast next Wednesday morning. He's going to try to get away if they can get out of meetings. But I love having him here in Auburn. Class guy. He represents Auburn exactly the way Auburn needs to be represented. And having him back here is a huge, huge kudos to Alex. And he'll be a great hand to lean on.
Yeah, you're right about that, Coach. Nobody better to sort of show Alex Golish Auburn than Cody. And yes, you mentioned the breakfast. But before we get to that, though, when are you back on? You talked about you're keeping your hand in, and I think one of the best analysts around there with the SEC Network.
Well, those are very kind words. Thank you, guys. You know, I've always been a part of a team, and you know, the TV team. This is my third time back with ESPN/the SEC mm-hmm. Network. I love those guys. I love doing TV. I love staying involved because football is my life. It's been part of my life since I was, you know, 3 years old, was able to pick one up and throw one. I was back on TV this past year. On Saturdays, I did ESPN Radio, I think for the affiliate that you guys carry on your mm-hmm. 106.7. So I did 7 or 8 Saturdays on ESPN Radio, and then I did weekly SEC Network, and I called a game or two in the booth and then did some up at ESPN for the national championship. So I'm kind of a utility guy because I've been with them for a while. So they'll call on me to do a couple different things, but I love it. The SEC Network guys, Dari and Chris Doering and Peter Burns and Alyssa Lang, they're all my team. And, I love those guys and I've been with them a bunch. So my plan is to do it again, next year. And, we're actually talking through that here soon, with ESPN. But I love that. I'm very grateful that they actually circled back to me for a third time after I retired, and very grateful to them and very honored that they would do that. But I love it, and I'll continue to do it for a long time, the way I see it, as long as they'll have me. But thank you for asking and the kind words, but I plan on being back on TV this fall.
That's great. And again, the breakfast is a week from today. You can go to betheedge.com, and you'll find it there. It's under the events. Coach Gene Chizik speaking next week at the Be the Edge Challenge Breakfast. Coach, again, we really appreciate it. Love to have you back on sometime.
Guys, let's do this. During football season, let's get together, and I'll come in there, and we'll sit down, and we'll do a couple segments together and talk football. I'd love it.
That sounds great. Coach, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a great day. Thanks for having me on.
Again, Be the Edge. Go to betheedge.com if you're interested, and you can see if you can get in that breakfast. We need to get to our final break here on the Wednesday Drive.
Robert Pig here with Pig Bob.
Know how they can keep up with everything you're doing?
Yes, sir. If you're going straight to the source, just head to montgomeryadvertiser.com and click on the little sports tab at the top, and you can click the Auburn name in the drop down and get everything you need. And if you're looking for me on social media, Twitter, TikTok, wherever it might be, just hit @ColeReporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter, and you'll be able to find me wherever you are looking for me.
Appreciate Coach Gene Chizik calling in, sort of cutting into Adam's time, but no.
You take it up with Coach, Adam.
That's right. Fun show today. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell, Adam, Coach Gene Chizik, all of you folks listening. We're out of time here, though, on the Wednesday Drive. We're back with you tomorrow.
Maybe a phone call with Ferg. He's got a basketball game.
Yeah, there is a basketball game tomorrow night. We'll see if we can talk with him and David Paschal as well. But that's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
At Open-